when it came to bits and pieces of biscuits being, as you say, put to one side, how were they reused?
Well, there was a shop called the Job Biscuit Shop. The Job Biscuits was their name for biscuits which had been damaged in production. Well, Jacobs had a funny name. Damaged biscuits were called Job Biscuits. The name, I don't know where it came from. But you obviously had a lot of damaged biscuits, and what would you do with them? And people wanted them, and what would you do? So we had a thing called the Job Biscuit Shop. And every week you went down and queued up and you paid and you got a bag full of packets which were damaged. The ends were in seals or else the biscuits were gone, or they had been a trial run and these were the early biscuits and they weren't quite up to standards. So we would delightfully queue up and get these biscuits and bring them home to the kids, who were absolutely thrilled. And so that was really, as far as the family is concerned, that was one of the perks of working in Jacobs. You got these Job Biscuits. But there were other little funny things. I remember I knew a guy in the lab, and they used to have do chocolate testing, and he would end up with a great big block of chocolate, which I would bring home, and which of course would be devoured. It was sawn into millions of bits and devoured. And another thing was, I remember being at the cream cracker plant, and of course some of the biscuits aren't right. The stamped out biscuit might fold over, but it then would be baked with the fold already in it. So then you'd bring home this cream cracker with the fold baked in it and say to the kids, "What did you do? Did you break that biscuit? Would you fold that back straight again?" And of course, great delight, they couldn't figure out how the hell the biscuit had been made, the fold already in it. And great delight, of course, when they were told that it was, you know, that you weren't a fool, it was actually came out of the manufacturing thing faulty. But in the old days, which I wasn't in, I do know that the office staff had the perk as you ordered your Job Biscuits as you sat at your desk. Because I suppose these guys weren't let out of the offices. So somebody came around with a little yoke and Mr. J. Smith ordered three bags of Job Biscuits at 1 and 4 pence each or whatever it was. And the person went off and then they were delivered later on in the day to his desk. So that was one of the little perks that they had. One of the other perks, incidentally, by the way, was that they had a swimming pool. Now, Jacobs, from the early 1900s, Jacobs being as a Quaker firm, they had a lot of interest in looking after people themselves. They were slightly more interested, we thought, in your soul than your pay packet. But anyway, the thing about this, they had this, so that the people who would be working in the really hot, steamy area of the ovens could then have a swim, and like the equivalent of a shower and a swim before I put on the clothes and go home. But then, of course, that was there. So you could actually, we used to go down sometimes at lunchtime and have a bit of a swim. And you'd come back and you'd sit at your desk. But unfortunately, the effects of the exertions meant that you were sort of a bit sleepy. And I often remember sitting at my desk at 2 o'clock, my hand up here, looking at some piece of paper, which is just obviously opposite my eye, and obviously studying this very studiously until I woke properly about 2:30. But that was, and of course, the sense of humour that you'd have. The fat came, sort of white fat would come, which is used as part of the biscuit. So, of course, somebody got some white fat and they put it into one of these hair cream jars, Brill cream. And, of course, it was left around, and one guy took a big gob of it out and rubbed it into his hair. Realised a moment later he'd rubbed fat into his hair, and, of course, we ran for the hills.
But talk to me about the... as you say, the Quaker tradition and the emphasis was on everything in house that you had. For example, a doctor would look after you physically, right. your complaints. A dentist would be there to look after you.
Yeah.
So everything was catered for.
That's quite true. You were looked at as a human. You looked at as a human being as opposed to just a cipher. Which, I mean, at that particular time, the start of the 1900s, workers really hadn't got any rights much. The Quakers were much better at that. And we go back to, they had a lot of input, incidentally, into the famine. A lot of people survived the famine because of the Quakers. Letter frack would have been wiped off the map if the Quakers hadn't actually come and set up soup kitchens there. But that's a different issue. There's a huge story about the Quakers and their if you like, a contribution to resolving the famine. I'll just mention one little thing where the business acumen of the Quakers came into action. When flour arrived at a place like, say, in County Cork, it would arrive, it would be booked into the local army barracks. They would then get a chit to say that 50 tonnes of flour has been entered there. They would then go up to Sligo and present that chit to the army barracks up in Sligo and take out 50 tonnes of flour there. So they saw the problem of transferring flour for the famine from A to B, and people, brigands halfway up, wouldn't have a chance of, you know, of taking the flour and doing whatever. So their business acumen was great, and they used that considerably during their time of the famine. But anyway, that's a huge subject. With regard to Jacob's alone, they looked after you. They had, when a young girl joined Jacob's, you know, she was looked after on various fronts. She was given skills like knitting and stuff like that. They had a place called the, I forget what it is now. Anyway, a place where they went out after work and they were given sort of household skills, like domestic skills, and also how to bake. They were given the skills of how to show you how to bake, and when they got married, the firm would present them with the wedding cake. You know, so there was a huge sense of the best sense of patriarchal looking after their employees
and family.
Oh yes, yeah, the family as well. I mean, the family could come in as well, and I'm not absolutely sure of that, but I do know various things went on in which the family would be involved in, and but. Yes,
and so did that tradition come down through the
Did. Yeah, you felt
Jacobs and
You felt that the Jacobs, the less well off you were, the more you were aware of the paternalistic outlook of the firm towards you. You know, I mean, people who could look after themselves and were organised were okay. But if you came from a family that wasn't very well organised, you hadn't got a lot of money, there was certainly a lot of help there for you as an individual, you know.
When it came to the Rising back in 1916, is there anything that remains of...
Well, not that I know of. I remember when I joined the place in 1966, it was 50 years after the Rising of 1916, which would have been 50 plus 16, which is 66. Outside Jacob's, there was a large sort of metal frame with a big glass thing about, say, 3 feet by 4 feet. And in that frame was pictures of Jacob's in 1916, and also quite a lot of writing explaining how Jacob's, the rebels had gone in, had taken over the factory, had done various things inside and so on and so forth, and had taken charge of it. The same as Boland's Mills had a similar thing outside. So a lot of these areas which were involved in 1916 had these explanatory sort of public awareness, if you like, I don't know what you call them, showcases outside them, which is very good, because the man on the street, he'd hear no two or three words about it, but he wouldn't really know the story, like anybody, like myself. So I stood in front of this thing and learned a lot about it. It was quite interesting. But the factory didn't change an awful lot, I reckon, since 1916. Like, you know, it was a very old-fashioned... the one thing about it you learned is that the whole area, nothing was square in Jacob's. So it was a series of houses which had been bought up and then gradually turned into the factory. So about every 10 feet, the wall changed by about 5 degrees, and then sort of gradually, as it turned down Bishop Street, the wall gradually curved. So if you had to fit in a wrapping machine, normally in a factory you put the wrapping machine, say, a foot away from the wall and you screw it to the deck or whatever else. In Bishop Street, everything had to be very carefully adjusted so that the angles of the wall were taken into account. That was just one of the pleasures of the engineering aspect.
Can you describe to me the interior of, say, it must have been a very old, well, like you say, it's an old building, so did it have panelled walls? Did it have big fireplaces?
No. It was actually the houses themselves were demolished and replaced by the factory building itself. So the factory building was it. But what it had is, when you went inside, you went up steps on the left hand side of the main factory, the main frontage, as you see it on Angel Street. Mm-hmm. Going down Bishop Street, there was a few steps. You went up this into a big fire. On the left was a huge aerial picture of the factory itself. And then there was a sort of a reception desk and so on and so forth. And then you went down steps. And as you went down steps, you started to hear noises. And then the noise became, they turned into things like clickety-clack, 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 clickety-clack. You were in the bottom of the bakehouse. So you were then standing beside one of the machines which was stamping out biscuits, and then these biscuits were heading off up an oven. And on your left-hand side, you could hear the banging noise of sort of metal trolleys. And these were coming out of the dough mixers were all in one great big room. So these used to mix their ton of dough, flop it into these metal yolks, and these metal yolks would then be rolled over. The ground was made out of...
Did they run in
tracks?
Tracks?
No. The interesting thing was, the floor was metal sheets. All of the Jacob's floors were always metal sheets. And you thought you'd scoot and you'd land your conch on the ground. You never did. And maybe it's the fact that you got used to walking on ice or something like that. But anyway, the metal things would have cut a hole in any average floor, or concrete or wood. So metal was the only thing. But it made a hell of a racket. But anyway, you could hear these things banging around, and then the guys came along, they got the stuff out and they put it in. They had a thing called a brake. And this brake was a thing for putting lumps of dough on one side. It was like a gigantic mangle. And it was operated, electrically operated. And the stuff went through, and it was to reduce, say, from, say, 4 inches to 2 inches. And then it went through again, reduced from 2 inches to 1 inch. But there was no such thing as health and safety. I was always afraid that a guy would get his finger caught and he'd appear at the far side about 15 feet long and have to be folded up and taken off to hospital. But lots of these things, long before health and safety, these things, you know, you realised in retrospect how dangerous they were.
Oh, what about heating the place? Just looking at the radiator, were there big pipes and radiators?
Yeah, there were old-fashioned. It was like an old-fashioned church. There were lots of pipes around the place. But, I mean, the oven was never... The oven area, the bakehouse, was never needed any heat because it was always red hot. Also, there was lots of machines going clackety-clack, and I don't actually remember much. I don't ever remember overhead heating at all. I can't actually remember significantly now where the heat came from. There were pipes going along. But,
you said there was a lot of burning of turf.
Yes. In the corner of the site, which is the sort of Peter Street, Bride Street corner, it's still there, there was a huge, tall boiler house, which is sort of, and what they did is they got turf in... I think, well, let me just think now. Yeah, they got turf in like mini briquettes, not actual briquettes, but smaller bits than that. And these were taken in and they were put into a lifting device, which went up and then went across, and then the actual bits of turf went into the hoppers, which ultimately fed the boilers. And it worked extremely well. Mm. I do know that Borden & Moran were involved in the design of that. So it was obviously to their advantage. Here was a large industrial customer which was going to use their product. And this, I thought it was during the war, but when I looked at the figures afterwards, in fact, it was around the 1950s and 60s and even 70s that they sort of were doing this. And it was great because the money went back into Ireland.
And who was your boss? When you say you were the engineer, who was the engineering manager?
Well, the engineering manager is a man called H.P. Moat. And he was sort of a fitting-looking gent who came from the north of Ireland. He had a sort of a lugubrious face, and it was alleged that he read the Book of Job for light reading during lunchtime. But he used to have a sort of a weekly meeting, and we used to all sit around the table. And actually, the whole object of the exercise was to be invisible at that table, so he couldn't see you. So everybody used to sort of go back very slightly. So there was sort of a slight angle as each guy attempted to be obscured by the guy in front of him. Anyway, this was where you confessed your sins in terms of projects which weren't going so well, or you were handed out another project. And one of the unfortunate things was if your desk was near his door, he would sort of open the door, and the nearest pellet, plonk, the project would land on your desk, and that was it.
And so you gave many, many years to Jacobs.
40 years.
40 years.
Yeah, yes. A job for life. The thing about it is, you see, a lot of people joined Jacobs, and the general workers joined Jacobs when they left school at 15. So they would spend 50 years in the place and they'd leave at 65. So that meant basically you had a whole lot of guys with 51 years service. And Nowadays, if you get 10-year service in an IT company, you'd nearly be given a sort of a car, and guys would blow bugles. At this time, guys would leave with 51-year service, and that was just almost the norm. You know, okay, the guy would shake him by the hand, you did a great job, but he was gone. And, you know, that's over half a century working for the one employer, a job for life, which is sort of gone now, really.
Yeah. What do you miss most about Jacobs?
I would say the adventure of setting out every day, not knowing what you're going to do, but knowing that it was going to be pleasure. The fact that you got to lift lids off things and find out how things work, and then you took notes and did drawings and all that sort of stuff. So the whole activity of going, doing, fixing, I even like the drawing aspect of it too, drawing up the things like that, and getting sort of, I was sort of slightly methodical. So if something was taken apart, I would take drawings and whatever and build a file on that. So then at a later date, there might be a meeting and saying, oh, part number four of the subject, and I would be able to take out a drawing or a photograph or something, and, you know, guide the conversation efficiently rather than faffing around about this and the other. Also, but the main thing would be the people. Mm. Every day, the people, it was great. It was like a comedy show half the time. And I have, you know, it was good to me. It stayed in business while I was still there. I had five kids, so it put them through school and university. And I have nothing, I can say nothing. It was a great employer, and I enjoyed every minute.
Were you sorry to see Jacob's doors closing for the last time?
The company, yes, I was. Yeah, I thought to myself, how did this happen? You know, but at the same time, it's all got to do with money. If you can't manage your finances, no matter who you are, you'll go out of business. Ford in the UK, you know. So that was one of the things I was really sorry to see. Half of me said, "I'm really sorry that's gone out of business." The other half said, wasn't I lucky to get out before the blade dropped and I got my kids sort of through school and stuff like that? But I was really very sorry, I must say. And it's a place I'll never forget. Mm. It just is part of... If you're in Jacobs for so many years, like CIA or RTE or anything like that, if you're in a place for that many years, it sort of seeps into your bones and you can't shake it off.
Mike Purcell, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
You're very welcome, Morris.